Hello, and welcome to the Degree of Freedom podcast. My name is Jonathan Haber. As I started to talk about last week, there are many sources for courses when you're pursuing a free education. MOOCs, massive open online courses, are the new kids in the block. If you've taken a course from Udacity, edX, or Coursera, or some of the other MOOC providers such as Udemy or Canvas, you've been able to take advantage of college-level learning materials, including lectures, syllabi, reading lists, homework, tests, and other assignments combined into a single integrated package. And very often, this package is attached to a calendar, meaning those enrolled in a MOOC course are responsible for listening to a certain set of lectures and completing a certain number of assignments each week, approximating the schedule and pacing of a traditional college course. But not all free courses put all these pieces together for you or give you deadlines you have to work towards. Even in the MOOC space, companies like Udacity provide what I call asynchronous courseware, meaning you could start a course anytime and move at your own pace rather than wait for the course to start and push yourself to finish all the work before the final deadline. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to asynchronous learning versus the synchronous scheduled learning of most of my MOOC classes. Being able to start a class whenever you like frees you from the tyranny of someone else's calendar, but it also requires a level of discipline to work towards deadlines that you establish for yourself. But if you have this discipline, your menu of learning options can increase enormously. Last week, for example, I mentioned iTunes U as a source for college-level lecture material from genuine university courses delivered unfiltered and in their entirety. With a little effort, you could track down the original syllabi for these courses that let you know what reading and other assignments are associated with each lecture. And with a little more wherewithal, you can also find other materials, such as homework assignments and even quizzes and exams, that can help you recreate most of a college course without having to set foot in a classroom. Now, there will be missing elements with such experiences, notably interaction with your teacher and fellow students. But these are the same things which are missing, or at least lacking, in most MOOC courses. So why all these forms of independent learning require a certain level of resourcefulness and discipline to pull off. I mention this because today's guest, Scott Young, did a project similar to my Degree of Freedom one-year BA program. But this one was different in that Scott attempted to learn everything you'd get from being enrolled in a four-year computer science program at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, thus the name for his project, the MIT Challenge. And Scott began this project before the age of the MOOC, which meant he had to pull together an approximation of the MIT experience utilizing the free course material MIT makes available through its Open Courseware initiative. Scott and I got together to share thoughts about our experiences and see what they might mean for future online learners. Because we ranged over so many topics, I've broken a recording of our discussion into two parts that will spread out over two editions of the podcast. So do you want to lead off?
Yeah, sure. So what your project is to do a Bachelor of Philosophy. Is that sort of the rough kind of program that you want to go through, is to do a Bachelor of Philosophy using only the MOOCs and open resources?
Yeah, it's similar to your project. I was sort of shocked when everybody told me I need to talk to Scott Young after I started this, since I thought I was the only person doing it.
Yeah.
Who's ever done it. But it's modeled on a four-year degree at a liberal arts university, the same way yours was modeled after a four-year MIT computer science degree. So this one is modeled after a four-year degree with a major in philosophy. So in that case, it would be for your first 2 years, you need to meet certain distribution requirements. A certain percentage of courses need to be in the humanities and social sciences and the science and math. And then for your total 4 years in college, you need to have a certain number of courses in your major. So in my case, it's philosophy. So you need to have 10 philosophy courses, at which two need to be taken at the intermediate and two at the advanced level. So it's modeled after the degree I got when I went to college originally.
And what's different about what you're doing versus what I'm doing is that you are using the MOOCs to, so just a bit of terminology for anybody who's listening here, the MOOCs stand for massively open online courses. And it's this kind of next generation of this free university classes, that what it was before was open courseware. And open courseware, the idea was that universities would be without really a lot of editing or tailoring to an online audience, just kind of scraping together what they were actually teaching in in-person classes and just putting it up online. So let's just record all the lecture videos, just start to finish. Let's just, you know, take all the lecture notes, upload them, links to textbooks, copies of the exams and papers. And it's really good for some classes. Some of the classes that I took is quite comprehensive. It's fairly close to being in the actual classroom. But others, it's very scant. You're like, well, they've got 5 out of 15 of the lecture notes and a link to a textbook and like 2 exams, and one of them has solutions, and that's about it. So I think that what I'm seeing with your project is that these MOOCs that, and I didn't even do my project that long ago. That was only like a year and a half ago that I started. They really didn't exist when I started. Like I think they did the first Stanford AI one just around the time that I was starting it. And so now the fact that like how far it's come that you're contemplating doing a full degree just using these, I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I was intrigued with the way you approach it because, you know, when I saw the dates that you were working within, the first MOOCs, well, technically, you know, MOOC-like things existed beforehand, but the first MOOCs we sort of recognize came online right around when you started. So, and first year, they were kind of focused largely on computer science courses, but then they gradually expanded into other areas in the humanities. So, whereas you kind of had to piece together what happened in the course, you know, because you had chunks of it, right? You knew the textbook, you had lecture notes, sometimes you had videos, sometimes you didn't. So you had to almost kind of reconstruct what the professor was trying to do. In the case of the MOOC classes, time-taking one advantage is the package is all together, right? You've got a series of lectures tied to a series of assignments, you know, be those tests or papers or readings. There's a schedule laid out. So there's, you know, some classes are longer than others, but every week there's an allotment of things to do. And I think, frankly, I think the way you approached it is suited to the learning style, well, obviously your learning style and other people's learning styles where you're kind of going to be efficiently extracting the information, whether it's from the text, whether it's from notes. Whereas the courses I've been taking, it certainly appeals to my learning style. I'm planning to do some self-paced courses later, I can describe later, to kind of test out some of the other alternative delivery mechanisms. But I would say one advantage now is if you do want to do this, you have the packages put together for you.
I haven't done that many MOOCs yet. I did a little bit of one on Coursera. I didn't get all the way through it. And right now I'm finishing one on edX, which I really like the platform for. And it's starkly different. Like it really feels a lot more like an actual class, I guess for good or for bad, that you have the lessons come out in certain dates. They have due dates for things. There's a certificate at the end. And I think that compared to what I was doing before, which, you know, which you're piecing together from material, it was really up to me to kind of decide how I was going to use that and really justify why how I was using it was fair in a way. And that was hard on me because you're trying to pass the class and do these things. But at the same time, you're also trying to say, well, this is sort of what we have. This is, I think, a reasonable way of going through it to emulate the actual classroom environment. And then you have, you know, sort of outside people. Some people think that's fine. Some people want to nitpick you on it. Whereas the MOOCs, they really set it up that even if it's not exactly the same as the in-person class, they're set up from an objective third-person standpoint. This is the way that we're evaluating it and the way that we consider it to be fair to evaluate this particular class.
Yeah, I would say, though, that similar to people would raise questions as to your approach of using these independent materials, I'd say with MOOCs, there's sort of the same concern only written over the entire MOOC experiment, right? Because some people will look at a course and say, you know, yes, that's the equivalent of a college course. And some people will look at it and say, well, it might be the equivalent of a college course in terms of the subject you're studying, but the assessments aren't that rigorous, or the papers you're writing are peer graded. So therefore, you haven't really proven you've learned as much as you would if you were in a 30-person class. The other way this sort of manifests itself with my particular project is because there aren't enough kind of formalized MOOCs to cover all the philosophy courses I want to take, I've extended beyond MOOCs and am including things like iTunes U courses and courses from sort of older technology, like, you know, Great Courses, the teaching company. These are lecture-only courses, and people do bring up, you know, the question, well, aren't you just auditing the course, right? Yeah. You're just listening to the lectures. You're not really taking the course. There aren't any assignments, you know, to which I answer, well, you know, I took an astronomy course through iTunes U, Life in the Universe, Ohio State University, Richard Pogge, I think his name was, the professor. And that was a recording of a real course, right? That was 44 lectures, 45 minutes each. So that ended up, you know, 30 plus hours of material. That's two or three times more lecture material than almost any other MOOC course I've taken. So right. I definitely learned a larger volume of material in that course. And then the question of assignments, well, you know, that's a real course. So I could go to the Professor Pogge's website, find homework assignments, and like you, do them. They're not graded. They're not automatically scored. but they're harder than the multiple choice questions I'm being asked on my Einstein relativity course. Right. That is a formal MOOC. So I think it's less clear to say what you did or what I'm doing when I take a MOOC or what I'm doing when I do an iTunes course. You know, those are all equivalent, or one is the equivalent of a college course and one isn't. I think it's something that personally I judge primarily, did I learn as much as I would have had I sat an actual college course? That's my mark.
So this is sort of an interesting point too, because really we're comparing these free online resources to actual university, like university that you have to get admission for, you have to pay tuition, that there's standardized boards, there's these kind of things. And there's a lot of critics out there who are sort of suggesting that it's not the same, it doesn't count, it's bad, or this is just going to be some marginal movement that's never going to take educating seriously. And although I think there are some arguments to kind of see what maybe some of the intrinsic limitations of this are, I feel that it's so new that like judging it based on how it is right now seems to be just like purposefully ignorant of the rate of improvement that these online course materials have had. Like even just when we're talking about your project, I don't know, when did you start your project? What was the starting
point? First of January this year.
First of January. So you started your project 3 months after I finished mine, and the methodology you were able to use, like you could, using MOOCs as an example, even if you weren't able to do them 100%, the fact that that was going to be a big basis of your degree, whereas that didn't even exist when I, or what didn't even exist in this, the format that we recognize it now with major participating universities, it didn't exist when I started, like, which was only a year prior, that I think it's sort of foolish to say, oh, well, you know, this online education thing, it's just a fad and it can't replace real universities. I just think that's a really short-sighted viewpoint. Although I would say that one of the things that we're seeing, because for both of us, the motivation for learning our project was not to get accreditation, was not to be able to have a piece of paper that says, I know all of X and I know that, and I could give that to an employer and they have high confidence that I know everything that I say that I know. Because for yourself, you know, you already have had a career, you already have an undergraduate degree. For myself, I already had a different undergraduate degree, and most of my aspirations are entrepreneurial, where people are fairly, they don't really consider that much the formal degree process. So I really see like the sort of beachhead being established in these courses are the people who are very interested in learning for learning's sake, regardless of whether the accreditation mechanism is ready. But I believe that that will help it establish over time a certain amount of legitimacy, that if, you know, the people who are starting and completing these courses are the people who are interested in self-education, then over time, as they get better at accrediting and making standards, that you might be able to say, yeah, I got a degree doing only MOOCs, and people would not consider it to be just, you know, oh, that's just a made up thing, right?
Well, I think criticism against MOOCs are pretty well rehearsed, right? You don't really have access to the professor. You don't have the kind of access to peers that you would have in all-night bull sessions in your dorm room or the coffee shop. And it's not entirely clear if the replacements for those, be they social network sites or forums, provide those same kind of experiences. And I guess I would just say they probably don't. They provide different experiences. I have not had the kind of intimate, sustained conversations in an online forum, but I've also had intelligent conversations with people who know a lot more than I do, because a lot of people taking these courses are older, they have a variety of experiences, they're international. So, you know, like you said, the whole flavor of what this is going to sort of shake out and look like is going to be not what's expected. And I think you brought up a really good point about folks who are kind of pioneering these are self-learners, right? Or self-motivated learners. I just had an interview with Anand Agarwal, president of edX, who said about half the people taking edX courses are above college age, meaning they are independent learners. And it strikes me that we have a place for 18-year-olds who finish high school and need a safe place to become educated for the next 4 years between 18 and 22. It's called college. We have a place for people after college if they want to stay in school called graduate school. What do you do in graduate school? You study what you study in college, only more in depth and more specialized. But there isn't really kind of a socially normalized place for people who did what you did, right? You studied business in college.
Right.
And then afterwards you thought, gosh, I wish I had the time to study computer science, or I studied chemistry in college. And, you know, years later I developed an interest in philosophy. I don't want to go to graduate school and spend 5 years specializing in just one philosopher. I want to learn philosophy broadly the way I would as an undergraduate. So I think that's one possibility, is that a new educational space might open up for people who don't just want to take a course or two as part of like lifelong learning. They actually want the equivalent of a degree, but what they want is a repeat of the educational experience of an undergraduate degree, not the specialized experience of a graduate degree.
And this is something that really strikes me, because I see two main arguments against this new sort of wave of online education and kind of the potential threat it has to colleges. One are from the teachers and academics and professors who point to, well, it has this limitation, is this limitation, is that limitation, compared to an actual classroom. And those criticisms to me always struck me as being somewhat laughable, because the way the criticism is framed is that the university education model is like some paragon of pedagogical virtue and everything else is kind of lower than it. And we already know from studies about how people learn that the classroom format hasn't changed in hundreds of years, pretty much. It hasn't gotten up to date with technology and science and how we understand how people learn, how they actually function. So the idea that this model is the best and everything else is some kind of poor substitute of it, to me, it strikes me first as being ridiculous. That isn't to say that MOOCs don't have a long way to go, but when you cast the argument in that way, like how close can it replicate university? The question to me is, maybe as an educational platform, should we be trying to make it as close as possible to university, or should we be trying to overcome some of the limitations that universities have because of the way that they're formatted?
Well, to be fair, I would say educators are inherently conservative, and I think understandably so, because every time somebody decides they're going to reform education, they drag the teachers through the latest thing, right? Now it's going to be portfolios. Now it's going to be open classrooms. Now it's going to be this new technology trend. So I think to a certain extent, they're taking a wait and see attitude. But I'd say there's also some sense that in today's economy, administrators are going to take a look at free MOOC classes or inexpensive MOOC classes and say, why hire a ethics professor when we could just have Michael Sandel from Harvard give our justice lectures, and you guys can just, you know, be adjuncts and grade papers, and sort of it's a flipped classroom, but with the teachers relegated to more and more marginal activity. And I think that is a legitimate concern. I guess the reason I'm less concerned about it is I just don't see that, you know, the kind of independent learning that, you know, you did or I did is going to be appropriate for all people. It's going to be appropriate for some people, but as more and more people are going to college, or we think everybody should go to college, there should be a place for people who can take advantage of these new technologies. There should be a place for people who want to be educated outside the classroom, kind of the un-college kids who want to do it through mentoring experience and those kind of things. And there'll be a place for people who learn best inside of a classroom with instructor in front of them, kind of helping guide them through. And it may just end up a blend. I mean, at some point, I would like to have more conversations with my peers, real one-on-one conversations about the subjects I'm studying. In theory, the MOOC model will need to evolve to the point where folks who need that can find that, in which case the kind of online components become just one element of a learning process that might be something people do as a group as opposed to individually.
Right. And I think that what we're seeing is just the beginning of really taking advantage of the medium that's offered by the sort of online, you know, MOOC course system. What we're seeing is kind of, I would liken it to when movies were on the, you know, on the silver screen, and then later there was television, and people really sort of derided the new medium of television compared to movies because it just lacked all these things that movies had, television didn't have. But now I would say that if, you know, like there's lots of television shows that artistically would compare to movies, at least they're a very different format. There's some people who would prefer a movie, some people would prefer a television show. But the idea that, you know, one is necessarily an inferior medium of the other, they have different strengths. There's things that you can do on television that you can't do in a movie, and vice versa. And so I feel that there's sort of a parallel with university education and MOOCs, that there's a lot of things that with the technology that I think are just only very now starting to get exploited. Like, the as an example, right now I'm doing this Walter Lewin physics course, which is on as a MOOC, and it was really kind of taking his actual MIT physics class and trying to repurpose that material in MOOC format, which is great. But it's also like in between the lectures, they're getting you to do little quizzes and like to get your sort of feedback on understanding what are you not understanding. And you're generating all this data. That's the kind of data that in an online course that could be, you know, fed back into the system. There's a lot of things that I think the technology has just barely scratched the surface of being able to exploit. That really are in some cases hard to do in a traditional classroom environment that are maybe more difficult to do.
I like your movie and television metaphor, because if you think about it, what do people do with television at first? They tried to make little movies, or they would film plays. So they were trying to replicate another art form. It's only when television became its own thing that it created its own formats, be it television news or the sitcom or et cetera. So it created something specific for the media. The reason I think that's apt is the bulk of the MOOC courses I've taken so far, which, you know, for the most part, have all been excellent experiences. I've enjoyed every one of them. But I would say the bulk of them, greatest strength has been the professor. In the video lectures, yes, they're 15-minute lectures, you know, 4 15-minute lectures versus 1 full-hour lecture. But it's basically a strong lecturer, a professor who has figured out really how to communicate this material. And the assignments, they range from perfunctory, you know, they're just there to make sure I read the material, to at least works in progress, like peer-graded essays, you know. So I've got a lot out of peer-graded essays, but only because I decided I was going to put a lot into them. I could write something in an hour and get the same aid as I did if I put 3 hours into it and really wrote about something I didn't know about before doing research. And so MOOCs, essentially, they still mostly resemble automated versions of existing classroom experiences. Where things are getting interesting is things like Udacity, for example. They don't follow that format. They break things down into very small increments with kind of challenging assessment questions built into every increment. So you can't progress in the class unless you've learned something before. And again, there's nothing new that comes out of the world of computer-based training, but they have applied it to their subjects, which make those quite different than the courses I've taken from Coursera or edX. One of the edX courses I've taken, probably the most interesting edX course I've taken so far, was a Greek hero. It's reading ancient Greek texts. But in that case, the professor is really steering you towards a kind of deep, direct engagement with specific text. So we spent the last week looking at Greek pottery as it depicts the Iliad. And in that case, it's not a classroom. You know, it's not a replication of the classroom experience. It's something that you really only can have either on the computer or in sort of a one-on-one session with a professor. So I think that's where kind of the future lies, is starting to treat these new technology platforms as unique things that will deliver teaching differently than it's been delivered in other places.
And one of the things you were saying, which I think is particularly valid, is that the new sort of MOOC platform, the standards for evaluation vary wildly. Like they don't have the consistency that, okay, well, if I'm taking class from MIT, I can have a certain expectation of the workload and the difficulty and what is going to be expected of me. And so one of the things I found was a bit of an advantage of using the OpenCourseWare when I did mine, which is that there's a disadvantage in terms of the material. The material is generally less put together and poorer. But because I was doing a technical program, it was doing programming assignments plus exams was a reasonable evaluative basis. That when you do an exam, you might not be like, well, they didn't really have that much material for this, and I had to kind of piece together a textbook, and it was a little bit hard going, and maybe this part I didn't quite get because the material was a bit sparse. But when you were doing the exam, you were like, some MIT student actually wrote this exam after doing the class that I kind of overviewed. So whether or not I can succeed at it, or whether or not I'm going to get as great a grade as someone who, you know, is in the actual classroom, spent the full 4 months, got to have access to all the resources I don't have, is that sort of, you know, up for debate. But the actual exam itself, I was reasonably confident that, okay, they're not going to just give me sort of a watered down version of the evaluation to make me feel good that I did this, but I didn't actually reach the standard, which a different program had set. And I haven't done that many of the MOOCs. The one that I've done right now on edX, which is from Watch the Lewin, is comparable from the one that I did using the actual exam. They're very, very similar in their evaluation. So I feel like he, when he was running this class, was insistent on, no, we're going to do this as the actual MIT class would be. It's a little bit easier because they don't do exams under the time constraints, and they often, just because the technology is a bit fickle, they'll give you like a couple attempts at a question, but they're not multiple choice. Like, you have to actually write out the algebraic formulas for things, and it has a software for analyzing it, which I think is a big step up from a lot of programs that even people are using in university, where it's, okay, well, there's four answers and two of them are clearly ridiculous. So 50-50, I don't even know how to do this question, but I can get it right half the time.
Yeah, well, I think you've got two good points there. You know, one is, as challenging as it was to sort of piece these courses together when you're working with the MIT OpenCourseWare, at least you knew two full semester courses at MIT were comparable. You know, somebody somewhere at MIT decided this physics course counts for one full semester worth of credit, and this computer science course counts for one full semester credit, and so therefore the two courses are comparable. Whereas in the case of MOOCs, you have some professors who definitely absolutely want this course to be as rigorous, if not more so, as a full semester course at whatever, you know, MIT or Harvard. So the course will be 14 weeks or 16 weeks, 4 or 5 hours a week of material. The assignments will be as challenging as they can make them, you know, given the technology. Whereas there's some other professors who clearly have something important to teach. Finished one course on property and liability. Wonderful course. But it was very clearly a professor who has, you know, information about this, has a philosophy about this subject, and he wants as many people to learn it as possible. And so as a result, he doesn't want to create huge barriers by making it really, really difficult to pass the class, because he would like lots of people to take it and pass it. Right. So, you know, and we're saying, okay, I'm saying that those each count as one credit in my degree, but at some point, someone's going to have to sit down and decide what's this course worth versus what's that course worth.
And that generally is something that I found very difficult to communicate when I was doing the MIT challenge, is that you have two groups of people from me that I saw. There's the first group of people who are completely blown away that, you know, these courses exist at all, that there's that even that it is possible to get all the material from an MIT degree to actually like cover the curriculum. And then there's the other people who think for some reason that it's like I've got an exact copy of every single class and every single thing is exactly the same as in an MIT. And they're like, well, why didn't you do this? And it's like, well, because they didn't have it. Like, there's just nothing to do about that. So that was a little bit frustrating, that the people who are, this has nothing to do with what MIT is actually doing. And then the people on the other hand who are the kind of treating it like I'm doing like MIT, but it's just distance ed. I'm not actually a student there. I'm just piecing this together myself. So I feel, what we were talking about is just the fact that, you know, I've done this and you've done this, but I don't know that many people who have attempted to do this. I think that's also a symptom of the fact that it's still very new and the courses are improving and changing rapidly. So I think if we looked back, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, that at least for our purposes, for the self-education purpose, that there'd be a lot of people who would consider, I'm going to try doing a degree in this just sort of on my own.
And my conversation with Scott Young will continue next time on the Degree of Freedom podcast.